would like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants, and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, a podcast focused on hospice palliative care. My name is Linda Meeks, and I am one of the education facilitators at the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network, and I am excited to invite my colleague, Rachel LaPonce, to talk about an article that she has researched. So welcome this morning, Rachel.
Thanks, Linda. Happy to be here again.
Yeah, we always have some fun when we work together on a podcast or a project.
We certainly do.
So what is the name of the article you wish to speak about today?
So I chose an article that was from 2022. It was from Sage Journals, and the article is called Assessing the Impact of a Health Navigator on Improving Access to Care and Addressing the Social Needs of Palliative Care Patients Experiencing Homelessness. And it was a service evaluation study, and it was in the Palliative Medicine Journal. The authors of it are Lillian Robinson, Leanne Trevor Babinski, Allison Tedesco, Donna Spanner, Trevor Morey, and Nahi Dasani.
Now, I know you like to spend some time during either your workday or your free time reading research articles. So I'm interested in, why did you choose this specific article?
So for a very good reason. One reason is, in North Simcoe Muskoka, we have a group of service providers that have gathered together to brainstorm some ways in which we can meet the needs of those that are homeless in our area with their palliative approach to care. So it's sort of in the forefront of my thoughts, simply because in our region, we're trying to put something together. But generally speaking, amongst individuals experiencing homelessness, specific groups are overrepresented, including those that are Indigenous, racialized individuals, people who first experienced homelessness in their youth, people who have experienced foster care, individuals identifying as 2SLGBTQ+. And research has clearly shown that people experiencing homelessness are at an increased risk for illness and mortality, and there are significant system barriers preventing them from receiving good palliative care at end of life. And as we know, you know, all palliative care is good care, and it's essential care, and it's care that everybody has a right to receive.
If you and I were speaking, we would understand the term health navigator, but for the audience and for maybe some of the non-professional people, could you please explain what a health navigator role actually is?
Of course. So a health navigator is an individual who positively impacts the patient's experience. And they do this through the care in which they help coordinate. So specifically related to palliative care, they take part in the coordination of care, They take part in case management. They take part in navigating transitions for these individuals, and they assist greatly in the reduction of barriers to care.
How can a health navigator be specifically helpful for the patients experiencing homelessness? I'm interested in that.
So a professional health navigator can improve access to care and help people meet their social needs. So specifically, individuals have social needs, they have psychological needs, they have physiological needs as far as their care goes. When we're thinking about palliative care, individuals still have a high degree of social needs that need to be met before you even start interacting or addressing some of the palliative needs specifically. So you almost, if you think of the boulder analogy that we used to speak to and how each boulder represents things that that individual has to deal with, sometimes you need to take out all of those other boulders that are bearing the specific palliative care needs in order to be able to address them specifically. You need to address other things, other barriers, other issues before you can even start helping them with their palliative care needs. And so a professional health navigator, so to speak, could assist with those social needs so that the palliative care needs could be seen a little bit better and accessed a little bit better.
Previously, you explained what the role of a health navigator is, but in this particular paper, do they have their own definition of a health navigator?
Yes, they do. So specifically in this document, they describe a health navigator as a healthcare professional or a peer who specializes in the coordination of care, case management, navigating healthcare transitions, and reducing barriers to care. So there have been multiple studies that have demonstrated the positive impact of social workers on palliative care teams, including their ability to improve quality of care, to facilitate discussions around advanced care planning, and to help educate patients and families. So social workers have been known to help patients achieve alignment with their prognostication, so to ensure that the mind and the understanding of the disease is on the same page as what the body is trying to do. Social workers also help screen for bereavement needs, issues that may need a specialist or someone beyond their scope of practice. And they're essential to ensuring that the team has some relevant and active discussions around the patients' and families' needs. There is great research that demonstrates that health navigators can improve the healthcare of underserved patients. And specifically, a health navigator, as defined in this document, it was the role of a social worker.
Can you tell us a little bit about this research paper and what you found as you read through it?
So this particular research functioned as a service evaluation of the PEACH health navigator position. So the palliative education and the care for the homeless, the PEACH program, is a community-based palliative care program in Toronto, Ontario. It was developed in response to the need for the delivery of equity-oriented palliative care to individuals experiencing homelessness. At the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, PEACH received funding to establish a health navigator role with the aim of providing social care through addressing housing issues, food security issues, and access to healthcare needs of this particular homeless population. So an individual with a master's of social work was hired for this navigator role, given their specialized skill and their ability to navigate systems. It was an interdisciplinary collaboration, and it involved evaluating and meeting the social needs of the clients.
What method was used to actually evaluate the service of the healthcare navigator?
So this study used an original service evaluation tool that was designed collaboratively by those involved in this research, and it was meant to capture the roles and responsibilities of the PEACH health navigator. So they developed some unique key performance indicators, KPIs they're called, for the purpose of evaluating and categorizing the different tasks that the Peach Navigator did. So in this particular study, they had two domains, and in those domains, they had key performance indicators, so KPIs. One group was palliative care tasks for people experiencing homelessness, unique to them. And then the other one was general community and home-based palliative care, or tasks that are associated with those, generally speaking, who live in a community location, who are receiving palliative care.
You previously mentioned that the PEACH program was out of Toronto, Ontario, which obviously is close to our network. So was the research actually just in Toronto, or was the research also done elsewhere with other homeless people?
No, it was specifically conducted in Toronto, Ontario, and it was granted approval by the Inner City Health Associates Research Oversight Committee. The PEACH Health Navigator position was occupied by only one individual for the entire duration of the study, and they served a total of 50 individuals experiencing homelessness within the Toronto area.
And you've spoken about key performance indicators, and I'm going to ask you some more questions in a minute, but how was the data specifically collected?
So in this study, the key performance indicators were tracked by the PEACH Health Navigator, and they did so between the timelines of July 2020 and July 2021. And by definition, the individuals that were involved in this study, so they were considered homeless if they were sleeping outside, if they were couch surfing, if they were living in a shelter, if they were vulnerably housed or temporarily or without permanent housing. And so the Health Navigator, when she carried out all her activities, she logged anonymously each of the tasks that she completed on an Excel spreadsheet to keep track of them. And those tasks that she encountered were also documented on an electronic medical record. So she kept an anonymous tally of the different tasks or the key performance indicators that she did, as well as, you know, part of, you know, her compliance with charting, kept track of the different things she did in the individual's electronic medical record. Excuse me. KPIs, the key performance indicators, were categorized by the rates at which they were completed. So for instance, there was the low frequency tasks, which were completed 0 to 1 time. There were the moderately frequency items, which were completed 2 to 9 times. And then there were some high frequency tasks that the navigator performed, which were done more than 10 times during the study period, which, as I said already, the study period was a year.
So as far as key performance indicators or KPIs, when you've just described low, medium, and high, is that actually the classifications of the KPIs, or are those different?
So those are different. So the classifications, and I'll go through the list of what those are. There's different items that were tasked out. One was in group one, one was in group two. And what I just described was the frequency at which they were done.
Okay.
So KPIs were considered a direct reflection of what the health navigator's activities were. And there was an entire list of what those classifications were. So for instance, I'll just go to the chart so that I can speak directly to what some of those items are. So in domain one, which was specific to people experiencing homelessness or living in vulnerable housing, there were a number of key performance indicators that were listed under those. So there were categories that were linked to housing. So tasks that the navigator would do would be referral to a shelter or a hotel program, housing application discussion, housing application was submitted, a housing application advocate for housing or accompany the individual to view a housing offer, etc. There were also some tasks under that domain one, specific to people experiencing homelessness related to income. So for instance, there's application for ODSP transportation coverage, application for ODSP medical necessities benefits, application for housing stability fund, etc. There's another category that goes under food security for those experiencing housing homelessness. So for instance, some of those tasks that were carried out were connect the individual to the food bank, connect the individual to Meals on Wheels, advocate regarding food security at case conferences. And then there was another category under those that are experiencing homelessness that specifically refers to coordination of services. So under that header was a Wheels Trans application, connect client to paid ID clinic, facilitate health card renewal, coordinate safety planning, lead a discussion with family. So as you can see, the tasks that the health navigator performed under domain one for people experiencing homelessness or living in vulnerable housing are very unique to those that are experiencing housing and are not necessarily those things that individuals who are not precariously housed our palliative approach to care individuals. So under domain two, those are categories or items, tasks that the health navigator completed that are general to community-based palliative care programs. So a couple examples under those would be that the health navigator attended a healthcare appointment with the client. The health navigator accompanied the individual to a palliative care unit admission. They facilitated a virtual care appointment. They connected them to an addiction support worker or case manager. They aided in the referral to a specialist. They provided some counseling or psychosocial support. They made a referral to a mental health provider. They prevented an adverse health event through surveillance. So they were checking in on them. They were calling them. Here's another item that she completed. They documented advanced care planning discussions after they had them, or they facilitated symptom management conversations with another specialist. So you can see there's a very different distinction between those that are in domain one, specific to people experiencing homelessness, and those tasks that were completed that were under the header of domain two, which were just general things that a navigator would do for those that are a palliative approach to care. Because we know very well that those that are experiencing homelessness, not only do you have to address the specific case-based tasks and activities related to palliative care, but you have all those other barriers specific to those that are vulnerably housed that you need to oversee and get beyond in order to be able to address the palliative care needs.
So would you say that is the difference between the KPIs that are listed in domain one and those listed in domain two?
100%. So those that are in domain one were derived from the PEACH health navigator job description and more specific to those that are homeless. And then the ones that were in domain two, the ones that I identified there, were derived from current literature related to a health navigator position in general and general tasks that are carried out in a palliative care setting for those that are in the community and not necessarily those that are homeless.
Okay, thanks for that clarification, because that's what I was wondering, if those that were actually in domain two were homeless as well. So now I understand. How many activities were completed or logged by the palliative health navigator from July 2020 to July 2021?
So between in that year period, between July 2020 and July 2021, the PEACH Health Navigator logged a total of 470 activities. So all those activities that I mentioned from domain one and domain two, and I didn't list all of them directly because there are so many, but the navigator logged a total of 407 specific activities. So all together in the domain of providing palliative care to people experiencing homelessness, the health navigator completed 207 activities from domain one. So a total of 407 from both domain one and domain two. 207 of them were specific to those experiencing homelessness. So under that category, and in the category of general community-based palliative care, those in category B that are not specific to just those that are homeless, a total of 200. So as I said, 407 altogether. And it almost looks like it was about 50-50. Half the tasks were related to those specifically experiencing homelessness. And then the other tasks that they completed were those that, you know, anybody who's receiving a palliative approach to care would need those tasks done.
Right. So, when you think about it, for one person who logged 407 tasks, half of her role was spent on individuals who were homeless.
Yeah, well, all of these individuals were homeless, but the tasks that had to be carried out for those individuals, half of those tasks were very specific to the issues and the barriers that homeless people need to experience. So if you think of all the tasks that go into providing a palliative approach to care, there is a whole nother section of barriers and tasks that need to also be done for those specifically experiencing homelessness. So if you had two individuals, one individual who is experiencing homelessness, but also a palliative approach to care, and you have another individual who's not experiencing homelessness, but experiencing a palliative approach to care, that individual who is not homeless may only need 10 items addressed for them by that health navigator. The person who is experiencing homelessness as well as a palliative approach to care most likely needs 20 or more items assisted with by a health navigator compared to someone who doesn't have that homelessness issue on top of a palliative approach to care. So what I'm basically trying to describe is those that are homeless have far more needs related to palliative care because they have needs that are specifically associated with being homeless on top of the palliative care needs. Whereas those that are just experiencing homelessness and have security with food, security with home, security with family and friends, they may not need as much assistance from a navigator. So all the individuals who were addressed in this study were homeless, and they all were experiencing a palliative approach to care. But what it's trying to describe is, you know, 50% of the items that were tasked by the navigator were general palliative care issues, but there was a whole 50% of other items that the navigator had to address that weren't specific to palliative care, but needed to be addressed because of the homelessness issue in order to be sure that they received palliative care and that palliative care that was quality.
And were there some activities that the healthcare navigator completed more often than others?
Yes, there definitely were. So specific activities completed most often by the healthcare navigator included booking a taxi for medical transportation, applying for transportation coverage, applying for medical necessities benefits through the provincial social services program, advocating for patients in their applications for housing, connecting individuals to local hospice grocery programs, coordinating with specialists, providing counseling to patients and their loved ones, picking up and delivering medications, attending case conference meetings, and attending an appointment with a patient. So those were all a lot of things that the health navigator had to complete. So it was found that palliative care, and it filled in the gaps in areas in which, you know, the individuals that were experiencing homelessness required. So those that were not specific to palliative care, but as I said, things that needed to be addressed in order for that person to be able to receive their palliative care. So for instance, if there was no ability for that navigator to apply for medical necessities through the provincial social service program, that person might not have had those medical necessities, that equipment that they required, those supplies that they needed. If that navigator didn't advocate for the patient in their application for housing, they might not have been able to receive home care if they didn't have a specific place to live. If that navigator didn't connect these individuals to local hospice grocery programs, if they didn't know that they could qualify for that, maybe they wouldn't be able to get the food or nutrition that they required to be able to continue to have their treatments that required them to be at a certain weight or maintain their weight. If the navigator wasn't able to coordinate with specialists, maybe they wouldn't be able to attend their appointments. They would miss them. If they didn't provide the ability to pick up or deliver their medications, maybe that person would be non-compliant with the prescriptions that were prescribed that would aid them in their symptom management. So, you know, that navigator piece was essential in ensuring that these individuals had their needs met specific to what they required being homeless. Without that, the other items would have kind of dropped off and would have been unmet.
One of the terms that you use that I actually identify with you is key pearls. I just love that. So I'm going to ask you, what are some of the key pearls that you derived from this research paper?
So emergent research offers an emphasis on addressing the social determinants of health to improve access to palliative care for people living with life-limiting illness. So we often, and as nursing students, talked about the social determinants of health. And I think reading this article, it really identifies to me that those that are homeless or precariously housed or are vulnerably housed have social determinants of health that are far greater that need to be met in order to be able to receive that quality palliative care. So as I've said already in this, you need to address some issues first before you can even start addressing the palliative care issues. And I found that the social determinants of health are required to be met in order to provide access to that quality palliative care. Those that are experiencing structural vulnerabilities, you know, there needs to be a harm reduction strategy in place in order to best serve these individuals. There needs to be better integration of social services within healthcare for these individuals. And we need to make sure that the social needs of the patient are met and that it's provided in a person-centered approach. The way we provide palliative approach to care to those that do not have some of these vulnerabilities is very different than the approach that we need to address palliative care for those that are vulnerably housed.
Rachel, what would you say makes this research different than some of the other research regarding health navigation?
So previous research studies have focused on the impact of social workers and health navigators on the delivery of palliative care. So they focused primarily on outcomes such as pain management, was it improved? Advanced care planning documentation, was it done? And hospice utilization. This document or this research, in contrast, looked to measure the outcomes that were relevant to the social determinants of health. So they examined the rates at which these outcomes were completed. So the rate at which these tasks were done. So these social determinants of health, those listed in domain one and domain two, how often were those outcomes addressed and completed during that study period? And by addressing those issues, did they find that the outcomes were more meaningful for the individuals? So if they were able to address these tasks to a high degree by the health navigator, were they able to find or ascertain some meaningful outcomes related to the social needs of those individuals? So for instance, they completed 28 activities related to housing, and those included housing applications and advocacy for housing. And this led to two successful housing applications during that the period of study. That is a very small amount. However, if you think of the impact on health and well-being of those patients who were precariously housed and the outcome of achieving successful housing for those individuals, it goes without speaking how valuable that was.
For sure. And what could be a concluding statement for this article?
So there's many challenges to overcome structural barriers in order to facilitate dignified and equitable end-of-life care for homeless individuals. This study found that a healthcare navigator could maximize the potential to address those barriers.
And Rachel, what would you say, either from your own experience or from the article that you've just covered here today, what are the next steps? Where do we go from here?
I find that this study opens the door to future conversations or future opportunities for research to enrich and fuel our understanding of the potential for the health navigator role, specifically for those that are vulnerably housed. So when we think about how a health navigator is beneficial and helpful for those individuals in these situations, it enhances the delivery of palliative care to structurally vulnerable populations. If they can make a difference for those that are in these vulnerable situations, think of the difference that a healthcare navigator would make for those that don't have these barriers to overcome. I think it's a great study that emphasizes the power and the value of having an individual who's advocating for you, who's a go-to person for you, who is a resource for you to help you in this journey to navigate some of the barriers that you may be coming up against. Future directions may include measuring the impact of the health navigator on the quality of care, on patient outcomes. Does a health navigator impact rates of survival? Does it impact cost savings for the healthcare system, generally speaking? So all of those things were not addressed in this particular study, but knowing the importance and the value that a health navigator provides, you know, future research could look at some of those other things that are important to keep in mind.
Well, I know that you represent our network on many regional tables, and I know that vulnerable populations and palliative care are an interest of yours. And so I wish you much success in being an advocate for vulnerable populations and homeless people in our region. And I want to thank you very much for joining me today. And I specifically love that the article that you chose was not only something that's near to your heart, but also it was obviously in a major city close to our region. So thank you, Rachel, for the great information and for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Linda.
And we'll talk soon.
Will do. Bye for now.